Hey guys, it's Sammy
and Robbie
back again to tell you about another upcoming con.
And we're super excited about this one.
Mm-hmm. It's another Indiana one. This one is PopCon, Indie PopCon to be exact. And it's going to be in Indianapolis, again at the Convention Center.
Indiana Convention Center.
Right in downtown Indianapolis. And Robbie will be there April 26th through the 28th.
Yes. We were just at the Indiana Comic-Con, so if you missed us, you get a chance to meet us again at PopCon.
Yes, well, at least Robbie.
At least me. Ashley will be there.
Oh, yeah, and Ashley will be there. That's an exciting thing.
Ashley will be there, so you get to meet a lot of us on the network.
Yeah, two-thirds.
Two-thirds of it, yes.
There you go. Yeah.
So if you're coming to the show, please stop by the Limitless Broadcasting booth. We're always excited to see you.
All right.
That's all I got.
Well, I guess we'll see you guys at the show.
Bye.
Bye. You're listening to the Limitless Broadcasting Network.
What's your favorite scary movie?
What's the boogeyman?
You hang up on me again, I'll cut you like a fish, understand?
It's showtime.
Hello, guys, and welcome back to another episode of You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Sammy.
And today, we have a very special guest with us, the original stuntman in the Ghostface for Scream.
And Scream 2.
And Scream 2, you're right.
Yes.
So we are interviewing him today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're super excited to talk with him.
Very much so.
Yeah, I mean, you can't get more iconic than the original Ghostface.
Absolutely.
Realistically.
We're trying to reach out to, I know there was two stuntmen for Scream 2.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to reach out to the other one as well to hopefully get him on the show. But we are excited.
The OG, original Ghostface.
Yeah, he got to kill Drew Barrymore. I almost said Cameron Diaz because of Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, so, no, not quite. Yeah.
We'll have to definitely ask him about that and how that was shooting that scene.
Exactly.
And how it was working with Mr. Wes Craven.
Of course. Yes.
So hope you enjoy the episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it'll be a fun one.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to it.
Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Lee Waddell, the original Ghostface actor and stuntman. And yes, I killed Drew.
Oh, that's one of the questions. That is one of the questions.
Definitely one of the things we want to talk about, yes.
Mm-hmm. So before we get to Scream, can you talk to us about how you got into stunt acting? How that process helped or worked out?
Yeah, so, I mean, during my junior high, high school, and just knocking around with my friends, we had always been making movies from like when the skateboards were really hitting hard. We'd make skateboard movies or kung fu movies. And so film and photography was always kind of in my mix. And then as I went through high school and got out of high school, went over to UCLA and their film department over there. And so they have a really great extensions program. And I was already kind of getting into film at that point. And, so I went over there and banged it around for a couple of years and learned a lot about filmmaking. And I, you know, I wanted to make movies at that point. So I had two choices getting out of high school, either make movies or go in the military. And I wanted to make movies because it paid better.
Right.
Makes sense.
And I love our special forces guys and all the armed services, and both sides of our family have strong military and law enforcement. So it had been an easy jump to go that direction, but I just had more of a passion and for making movies. And that's here we are now.
That's kind of the same way. My dad was a captain in the Air Force and he really wanted me to do the Air Force route. And I really wanted to do the movie route.
Yeah.
So I went to Ball State University. That's a David Letterman school.
Yep.
And so we're the same way.
Yeah. And then, and I never really second guessed myself, but I would have been great at my military career. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
And I love all those men and women that are putting it out there for our country. And, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, they're doing a hard work in some really bad spaces sometimes. So I appreciate them. And like, you know, if they come and see me at my cons and they're active or retired, you know, they got their card on them, and absolutely, I take care of those guys.
That's great.
That's awesome. I love that.
That's great. Mm-hmm. So you get to, so you're based out of LA.
Originally.
Yeah, I mean, originally, because I was, you know, making movies. And I was, that was the epicenter for, you know, for decades. Mm-hmm. And it's not quite like that anymore. But
right.
Mm-hmm. And then once I got out of the film business and retired out, I had to get out of LA because as much as I love California, it's a great state. But trying to do business there and live there is just rough.
Yes,
mm-hmm, I can imagine.
I've lived out in LA.
Oh yeah,
as you well.
You know, then yeah, and you know, it just gets crazier every day, and so I'm really, I got out of there, and you know, and I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm. So, how did you land your first stunt gig in Hollywood?
You know, so back in my day when I started my tenure, so to speak, you know, you'd have to get out and just flat out hustle,
right?
Mm-hmm. And so, my very first extras work, right? You'd be background extras work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was with on a John Carpenter movie called Christine.
Okay. Oh, okay. Right? Very cool.
Classic movie. And I watched it again just a few months back. And then I forgot how fun that movie was and how cool it was. That's a fun movie.
Did you see yourself in the background? Oh, look, there's me.
Yeah. You know, I'm sitting up on a bleacher playing a teenager and I'm, you know, along with 500 other teenagers, so to speak. So, yeah, I was fleeting at best. And, but we had a good time and, you know, so I got to hang out on the set, and the whole purpose was to do extras work is to get on the set and meet the stunt coordinators. Right.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So that's why we would do that. So we'd, you know, sign up for extras work and I could get on the, and yeah, you'd make about $20 a day or whatever it was, but you could get on the set and meet the right people. And if I kept my mouth shut and my ears open, which I did, I could learn a lot and just watch the camera and how the departments worked and where everything like that.
Mm-hmm. Very
so
cool.
That was my very first kind of like introduction into the film business as far as like legit Hollywood production.
How long of a shoot was it? You remember?
I was only on it for 2 or 3 days. And then they would probably, I'm going to guess they went maybe 6 weeks.
Okay.
You know,
I'm assuming. Go on.
I'm going to guess, but I wasn't on the whole show, so I don't know. Right. But you know, most films are done in 6 to 8 weeks max.
Right.
Not you know, some are longer, some are shorter.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Correct. So you booked that job and then?
Yeah, so I booked that job and I, you know, learned a lot and I sat around there and watched the stunt stuff and there and then, you know, and then, you know, you have a great little podcast, but it's a flat out hustle.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. You can't get anywhere without you know, and I'm not being in generation wise, but unless you're willing to work and put your nose down and just grind, you know, you're going to get passed by. If you can't do that in today's world, regardless of what your age is, if you can't sit there and grind and do that work, you're going to get put in the dust because there's going to be somebody who's right behind you that's more hungry, more dedicated.
That's so true.
And they're just good. And they're just going to work. All you have to do is show up and work.
Right.
And you win in today's game.
Right.
You know, both my sons are in the industry and I kept them out of the stunt side. Fortunately, that was good. But, you know, when they were first breaking in, I'm like, show up, do your job, keep a good attitude and work. And now they're, you know, they're way up the food chain. And
are they actors or producers?
No, they're both in the LED side of life. So they do like one runs the Sphere in Vegas, right?
Really? That's super cool.
Yeah. And the other one does huge greens. Well, they're not green screen, but LED screen for production.
Ooh. Yeah. Right? So
the days of green screen are going by quickly and now it's all LED.
You're right.
So not a thing anymore.
It's so much. It is so cool to see what you could do with an LED screen. Right. And you sit there and make a whole backdrop out of LED screen. And then next thing you know, they fired up and whatever you choose for that background, you can control the sun angle, the shadows, the wind. I mean, it's just phenomenal. I love shooting against that. It's great stuff. It's huge technology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're both off kicking ass and having them taking names because they work. They don't know any difference than the work. They saw me do it. You know, you work, you hustle, and you work. And so anybody that's not willing to put that sweat equity into their passion, they're going to get left behind. And especially in today's world.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, that's a defining difference. You know, everybody wants the money, but they don't want to work for it. Everybody wants the notoriety and fame, but they don't want to work. And if you're passionate about it, it's not work.
Right.
That's true. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I could not live without pursuing stunts and being a stuntman. I worked 3 jobs just to support that habit so I could go out during the day and hustle stunt coordinators. You know, and if there was no other vision, I didn't have like a B plan or a C plan. That is what I wanted to do, and that's what I did. You know, and
you made it happen.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. But it was pure determination, a lot of and the film business is a tough racket.
You know, it is.
It's fun, but it's a tough racket. If you got rejection issues, don't go make movies.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
And so, you know, and I don't want to be a downer on anybody, but I want to be realistic about it. You know, and making movies is fun, but when you start actually jumping in the big boy game out there, it's tough business.
See, hear a lot of no's before you hear a lot of yeses.
Hear that yes.
Yeah, I mean, I probably auditioned for 100 commercials and I got one. Right?
Got one?
Yeah. Got one.
Okay.
And, yeah.
You know, and they go like, you'd sit there and go out for a part that you are perfect for. Like, I'm like, oh, they wrote this for Lee Waddell. And I'd go do my thing and audition. Then I'd see the commercial. I'm like, that is nothing like what they said they wanted.
Oh, my gosh.
So what do you do with that, right? You know. But I digress. So
how did Scream come about? I know on your website, it said you had a mentor and he kind of helped you along the process. Can you get into that a little bit?
Yeah. So a good friend. In fact, I just saw him last weekend just a couple of days ago down in Bastrop, Texas at what was it? That little con they have down there. Cult Classic, I believe it is.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So his name's Tony Caesar, and he's a legend. He's got a huge resume and worked with a bunch of them. And so Tony and I met in the early 80s, and you know, he took me under his wing and kind of showed me the ropes and introduced me to Wes, right?
Okay.
And so by the time my very first film with Wes Craven was Nightmare One.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And so by the time Scream comes along, here we are, what, 95, 96, you know, I've done a bunch of Wes Craven films and a bunch of Tony films. And it was like, hey, we're making a movie. I'm like, great. He goes, I want you to do this opening sequence because I'd worked with Drew before. Wes knew me. Tony knew me. I'd worked with Drew Barrymore before. So it was an easy fit.
Oh,
and
he goes,
come on in and, you know, come on in and do it. I'm like, great. Sign me up. And it was the same bunch of people, and you know, we had a great time. And it was another Wes movie. No, it didn't feel any different or special or anything else. Like, hey, great, another horror movie. Let's go have fun.
I know Wes Craven works with a lot of the same people.
Likes to repeat, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we had like the same producers and a lot of the same prop guys and effects guys and things like that. A lot of the same players. So it was a great, you know. It was atypical Wes film. You know, did I know it was going to be, here we are 30 years later, still talking about it? Heck no, man. If I knew that, I would have backed my truck up and hooked up the wardrobe trailer. But here we are, you know.
I got to ask, how was it on set? Like, I know you were used to working with Wes Craven, but shooting that iconic opening scene of Scream, how was that?
So it was a typical Wes movie. So it wasn't anything special in my mind, right? But what was different about it, instead of just being a stuntman, you know, or playing a character in a sense, I had to be the actor first and bring the character that Wes and I and Tony set out and brought forth. So first I was an actor with the character. Then I was the stuntman and taking care of Drew. Didn't want to hurt her.
Right.
So, and then I had to hit my marks, do it at night in wardrobe that you can't run in and you can't see out of the mask. So it was technical.
Right.
You know, and bringing it all and doing it all I think we did. I think we shot a rehearsal in a sense just for staging and blocking without the mask, you know, to kind of get the timings down.
Right.
And then we shot it. And then we shot it the next take. So I think we did it in one, if I'm correct.
Wow. That was one of my questions. How long did it take you to shoot that?
Wes doesn't mess around. So, I mean, we would do a lot of one and two takes.
Okay. Right?
And even as the, you know, being the actor side of it and even the stuntman side of it, I'd go back to Wes and tell him like, what'd you think? They're like, oh, that's fine. I'm like, hey, I could give you another one. You know, like, they're like, nope, we got it, moving on. Right.
So, okay.
One of the things that Wes did teach me and in a sense or convey to me was like, don't be afraid to ask for another take.
Mm-hmm.
Which is rare for them from a stunt guy point of view, but not from an actor point of view.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I do that. I would do that often on small stunts. You know, when you wreck a car or something, the way that's going to be, you know, an all day reset or 6 hours, you don't get take two.
Right.
But if it was something simpler, like, you know, a fight or something like that. It's like, you know, you're throwing a fight and maybe your timing's off a little bit, or maybe you threw a punch that was a little wide and you could see the miss on camera. And, you know, you just go back in and throw it again. It's not a big deal.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, that didn't feel right from my side. How did it look from yours? You're like, oh, it was good. Okay, moving on. Like, didn't feel right. Can we have another one? They're like, yeah, let's do another one.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, don't be afraid to ask for that.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite stunt to shoot? Like when you're working?
No. You know, if you have the budget time and everything, car chases are really fun.
Mm. I can imagine.
Car chases are really, yeah, you know, especially when they're shot and done correctly. And I'm a big practical guy, so no CG. You know, you're shooting them at speed. You're putting some really good camera angles together. I like doing car work in that sense.
Gotcha. You know. So I got to ask, how was it actually acting with Drew Barrymore?
So Drew and I had worked together before, I think on Poison Ivy, like a year or two before.
Wow, I forgot she was in Poison Ivy.
And so her and I worked together on that one. And Drew is a very, for lack of a better way to phrase it, she's a very game chick. I mean, yeah. That girl, a super pro, super athletic, and she don't mind hitting the ground, right? So she's very, I have a very endearing spot for her. I love her because she is that way. She's not a girly girl. She's cute and fun and she look all girly girly, but boy, she'll get it on. And I love that.
That's and great. So,
love yeah. That.
One thing yeah, about,
go ahead.
One thing about Scream is so iconic is, yeah, Wes Craven had Drew Barrymore and you're like, oh, she's going to star.
She's a star.
But he kills her in the first 20 minutes and it's great. And I think that's some of the reason why we still talk about this movie today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you took the, you know, and Drew's on top of the world again. And she, you know, she was at the top of her game, came down through the valley. Now she's back up on top, just crushing it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you look at her. She's got magazines and makeup and dogs and the TV show. She's crushing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's a very, very smart businesswoman on top of that. And even further back than that, she's, you know, she's Hollywood royalty.
Yes,
people sometimes forget the Barrymore name and how big and iconic that name is by itself, regardless of the front of it. Right? So she's out there killing it. And what is she doing? She's flat out grinding and hustling. She's working 100-hour week.
Oh, yeah.
No kidding. Mm-hmm.
Do you still talk to her?
No, I really wish I could cross her path. I wish, you know, because there are a couple of things. Hey, I still very much admire her. Always have, always will. I'd love it to have her come out and do a convention.
Oh, that would be crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It would. And that's just for the, you know, it's not a money issue, but it would be a fan dream thing, right? You know, and then if we could swing it, I'd just take all the money and we'll throw it to one of her charities or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be the win on that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Absolutely.
So I'd love to see her and even Courtney to come out and do something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, but, yeah.
That would be awesome.
And because, you know, we could raise a lot of money for a lot of good causes.
Mm-hmm.
You were recently on Jamie Kennedy's podcast.
Yeah, Jamie. So Jamie took me when I started out going out and doing these conventions a couple of years ago. I mean, the whole Screamcast has been great about it, but Jamie and I are often put together. So we play off each other quite well. We have kind of the same sense of humor. So he's a good wingman. Super fun doing his podcast, right? Because, he's down there in the middle of LA, right in the thick of it. And it's really close to Paramount and a lot of my own stomping ground. So to go down there and hang out with him a little bit and go down to the studio and bang that out was just a delight.
How long do you guys record for?
We went 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours. Mm-hmm. We were going for a minute.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's not including the before and after.
Right.
Sure, yeah. Right. We spent a good amount of time hanging out. It was great.
So feeding off that, you still keep in touch with the original cast.
Yeah. I mean, we work together in a sense. We're going around signing cool stuff. Cool fans. There's a tough job. Mm-hmm. Right. In that sense. Yeah. We cross paths often. I think I see him. We all have a big reunion show. End of April.
Okay.
Ooh, okay.
And so we're doing, it's a big one. What is it? Calgary Fan Fest. FanX, I think. Whatever it is.
Okay.
So it's up there in Calgary. It's in Canada. It's a 4-day show. It's huge. It's a big one. And so awesome. I think even Miss Rose McGowan's coming up for that one.
Wow.
So that's going to be.
Wow. That's cool.
Super, yeah. Super reunion show. And she is one of the coolest people on earth. I just adore that woman. She is so neat.
She seems like it.
We haven't met her yet, but
she's on the list.
She's on the list.
Yeah, at one of these cons. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's just she's a super special woman. I just really enjoy hanging out with her.
Getting back to the Drew Barrymore scene for a second, what do you know what she thought about when Wes told her, we're going to kill you off in this scene? What was her initial reaction?
I think if I remember correctly, I think they were talking about her doing the lead, like Nev's lead. And then I think she's the one who said, no, I don't want her to be killed off. Because, she read the script. So I think she wanted that part.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's how that went.
I think you're right.
I think I did read that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Then Drew was like, nope, kill me first.
Yeah. Which was just a brilliant play.
I agree.
It really was. Yes.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
How was I know there was a 21 day shoot when you're at Stu's house. How was shooting that scene? Those scenes.
That's like the big thing. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So I was only in there. I only had like one day in there, a couple of days in there. That was really just to do a scout with Tony. And I didn't, cause I did the first half of the film. Then they moved into the second half. So I was up at the Stu house and I remember it. And I was up there just like a year ago doing the Scream House tour thing.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I'd been there in 28 years. So I walked through the front door and it looks the same.
Wow.
So I'm walking around the house. I'm like, oh, this is weird. It was like this very, very deja vu.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't deja vu because I've obviously had done it, but it was really neat to get back there and walk through the door again. It was really,
wow.
It was kind of mesmerizing. I really enjoyed that experience of going back.
I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I didn't have that much time in the house. And it's a neat house, just like when we shot the opening sequence with Drew, we're in there for 2 or 3 days, but.
Wow. 2 or 3 days. Wow. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, I came on and remember we only shot 6 weeks, 5 weeks.
Yeah.
I was there for the first two, mm-hmm. two and change, right? Give or take. And then I was off to another film and then they wrapped up and then we released in December of 96, mm-hmm. big
yes.
smash hit.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started right back into 2, mm-hmm. and finished up 2 and got it. When was our release on 2? Then they'd want to do, was it the summer?
I think it was July, right?
It was July. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were trying to get it done in time to hit that summer crush.
Yeah, got to keep the momentum going.
So when it came to 2, right. did they come to you and say, hey, we're going to do a part 2 of this? Can you continue?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things about Ghostface and originally is they didn't want to have only one guy play it.
Okay. Right?
Mm-hmm. Because obviously we didn't know who the killer was. And right. they didn't want mm-hmm. to get Ghostface dialed in. And I hate to pick on Kane because Kane Potter, who's a good friend of mine, you know, he ended up doing how many movies? Yeah, three of them, right?
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm. And he became that character, and it took him a while to break out of having Kane do it. And he did. It's not because he did a bad job, but they didn't want to have that same thing occur with Ghostface. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, you know, even though Ghostface is a physical acting bit, if you want, let's say I was casted as the Ghostface through the whole thing, and I wad myself up halfway through. Now they got to go find somebody that's my size, but mm-hmm, also, match. Which is not mm-hmm. a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm 5'11", right? But they have to. The physical movements would have to match.
Yes.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And that's not easy.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm, for sure.
That makes sense.
Yeah, mm-hmm, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of upside. As much as I wanted to play that character all the way through, and I will wish I could have played him all the way through 6, but the business side and the smart move side of it is the way they played it, the better.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And especially as the franchise took over and you had multiple killers. Like, by the time you get to 6, we got 3 of us running around there.
Right.
What do you do with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of Scream 6? Were you a big fan of it?
So, yeah, I actually liked 6. And what I liked about 6 was they gave Ghostface his balls back.
Mm-hmm. He's pretty badass in that one, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so originally when Wes and I and Tony was there, and we're about 20 minutes from rolling cameras, right? And I'm not even wearing a wardrobe yet. I think I might have had the robe on. And I'm talking to Wes, and Tony's there. I'm like, so tell me about this character, Wes. What is he, she, it? What is this thing, right? And Wes goes on and gives me kind of the background and whatnot. And I go, how does he move? What's the, you know, what's the drivers here? And, you know, we're getting into the character. He's unwrapping the character for me so I can mm-hmm. give him,
right.
You know, I can move and give him what he envisions the character is, right? And the one thing he said, he goes, remember, this guy's like a phantom. That's how he moves, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I could get behind phantom, right? So if you look at my version of phantoms, and it goes all the way back to, I think, the original Phantom, where I think it was Lugosi who played that, wasn't it? Chaney, right? Universal time.
Yes.
Back.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the way that I remember him watching him as a kid, the way he moved, it was with direction and swiftness and, you know, all that stuff. So that's how, in my mind, how Phantoms move. They're very swift. They're very aggressive. They move with intention and purpose from mm-hmm. A to B to C. Right? They mm-hmm. don't trip over themselves. And so when you see me play the original Ghostface, that is how I played him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He was very intentional and swift in his movements. And you see it in the house more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the franchise moved along, they got away from that original concept.
Oh, okay.
And so by the time like 5 came along, it was like the Keystone Cops meet Ghostface. It was ridiculous. He could chirp on his own shadow.
Yes. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really pathetic. But what I liked about 5 is that about halfway through 5, remember that where they kind of gave that nod to Wes about where they did all the reveals in the kitchen and all that stuff?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you're expecting Ghostface to be there. And he wasn't, but that was a really good nod to Wes because mm-hmm. that was one of Wes's favorite things to do. And so I appreciated that very much about 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then 6, by the time 6 gets back, because 5 was such just... Ghostface was just comical in 5.
He really was. Like,
oh my gosh, mm-hmm. I get hard to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when 6 came along and they made him aggressive and agile and mean and mm-hmm. being the killer that Ghostface is, I appreciate them bringing, like I said, he got his balls back.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And he moves with intention and aggression and swiftness. And he's, mm-hmm. you know, he's a killer.
That's, right. You know,
yeah, that's probably why we like 6 better, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I got to ask, yeah. What did you think when they killed off Dewey? in five. What are your thoughts about that?
I threw the BS card on that because what's her name? All of 5 foot two is not on the same eye level as 6 foot David Arquette.
Yeah.
Right. No. And so when David gets killed, you know, they're eye to eye, and yet it's her character 5 foot nothing. You know, it's just I just irritated me in it. And like I said, I don't want to necessarily bash movies because they're fun. You gotta remember guys, it's a horror.
Right.
But like I don't like they wrapped up five and they wrapped up even it even struck me worse on six. Is like remember the final last, let's call it the last scene when everybody's just getting eviscerated on the subway.
Yes.
And Cuba's character gets Benny hunted by two of them, right? Just filleted. Mm-hmm. You know, and then they wrap everything up, super bow on the end of it, and everybody's like walking around with a flesh wound, and he's like on a gurney.
Yes.
They're like, oh, and I'll see you next week, or, you know.
What?
Like, what, you guys run out of money? What are you thinking? You're killing me, right?
Yes.
And I was like, oh my gosh. You know, if you wanted to mess with the franchise, you have these guys on life support and the viewer doesn't know if they freaking make it or not.
Yeah,
I agree. Mm-hmm. You know, much better.
They made it all stupid Disney, like everybody was fine bullshit.
Yes.
And
yes. Like,
mm-hmm. And I'm going to, you know, these guys are going to hate me. But it's like, you know, if they were barely alive when they faded to black and the viewers didn't know, when seven comes along and negotiations aren't quite right, we don't know if they made them. Well, you just write him out. He's like, oh, he didn't make it on the way to the hospital. Boom, true. The character's gone. You don't have to worry about a recast.
Right.
You know, that's just hard. That's this hardcore movie making right there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, whatever.
I'm glad you brought up seven.
They're directors and I'm not.
That's true.
I'm glad you brought up seven because I'm going to ask you about seven. What do you think about the state of Scream 7?
Because, you know, all the fans, we're just...
You think it's going to happen?
In a limbo now.
Oh, absolutely. There is no way Hollywood is going to leave that kind of cash on the table.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we also got to remember in our little council culture that we live in, give it 6 months and people will be on to some other diatribe and they'll just
yeah,
reinvent.
We said that too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
I agree.
You know, so... I think the best thing they could do for seven is to bring me back and then, we'll see what happens from there.
But Abby, we're behind that, right?
Yeah, I agree with that.
We're on board with that.
Do you think they should
Go ahead.
No, you finish first and then I'll ask this next question.
Well, I was going to kind of go down that rabbit hole of like, you know, there's always talk of, you know, obviously bringing Stu back and.
Yep.
And Billy, and you know, they're trying to figure out how to reinvent the wheel and have Drew come back in. And you know, if Drew somehow, if they throw enough money at it and Nev, whatever it takes. I mean, but if Drew came back in there, I think it would be poetic if she killed me.
How would you do that though? You gutted her like a fish.
How are they going to write her back into seven? Who knows? It's Hollywood. Right,
it is Hollywood. I mean, true.
So we'll see. Seven's gonna happen.
Okay,
seven's gonna happen. Mm-hmm. They're not gonna leave that kind of cash hanging out there. Mm-hmm. They'll probably rewrite it a few times and they'll let it go. They'll put it to bed for a little bit. Let the
dust die down.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Ashes kind of lay down for a minute.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But they're not gonna leave that. I mean, what did six do? 250 million?
Yes,
some ridiculous number, a huge number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think with right. six.
It was triple digit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It made a lot of money.
So a lot of money.
It was, mm-hmm. it was well past 200.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and Hollywood ain't going to leave that money out there. Mm-mm. And so they'll go do this. Seven will happen.
Okay.
Seven's going to happen.
What would you want to see in seven?
Well, here's something that I'm going to tip my hat. As a matter of fact, I think I got, that's my buck hat, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Here's something that that I found when I was talking to Buck Knives at a show not too long ago, and it turns out that they have a green handled Buck 120.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a little bit, and if you guys I'm gonna say it on your podcast first and get the rumor mill fine. Remember before Seven went off the rails, they were talking about doing away with the Buck 120.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, they can't do that.
Right.
what if they came out with a different color on the handle? Just something to set it off a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. That would be cool.
That would be cool.
Right? Mm-hmm. So I had this green handle one that I saw, and I'm like, hey. And I was talking to Buck directly. I'm like, where'd this come from? And they're like, you know, and it's not that they didn't say anything like, oh, we just did this other, you know, version. Da da. I'm like, one of the most iconic, and even outside of the Scream franchise, the Buck 120 is just an iconic Americana knife. It is one of the great knives, right? And I'm like, well, why would you guys all of a sudden just decide to put a green handle on it, much less a red handle? And so it will be a franchise mistake to eliminate the Buck 120.
Absolutely. No, I agree. Yeah, 100%. But
if they mixed it up and did a different color handled or something that distinguishes it and put a storyline behind that or just a little bit of a curveball, spark a whole new interest.
Oh, yeah.
People would obsess over that.
Let me ask you, how was shooting 2? Like Scream 2? Did you kill Jada Pinkett?
No, that was Alan Robinson.
Okay.
Good close friend of mine. In fact, I started him in the stunt business. And a lot of people don't realize that Alan was Stu's double in Scream 1.
I knew that.
Right? And so that when you see Stu getting zapped by the TV, that's really Alan under there doing the funky chicken because he's getting electrocuted. And so, so Alan did the opening sequence, and I don't know if I was not available. Something, there was a reason Alan did the opening. And then right as we were wrapping up the opening sequence with him and Jada, I came in to do all the detective car chase crash work.
Okay.
All right. So, I think my kills on and it's funny because I get this question a lot, like, oh, who has the most kills out of all the Ghostfaces? And I think I do. The guys that actually played Ghostface, I think I still have it.
That's awesome.
And then something else is really cool about Ghostface is that there's only 6 opening scene Ghostface in the history of, right? So obviously I started it.
And then
we had 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And those were all different stunt guys or actors playing Ghostface for opening sequences. Mm-hmm. So it's actually rare territory.
Yeah.
To do an opening sequence.
Mm-hmm.
I got to ask, who killed Sarah Michelle Gellar in 2? Is that you?
No, I killed... So I did the detective. So I've gotten the fight. I didn't really. So if you remember the car sequence, it was I beat the one detective up. I didn't really kill him.
Okay, right.
And then the detectives on the hood, definitely killed him.
Yes.
And then who was fine young actress, and I can never remember her name. Who was the actress that was with Neb in the back of the detective car? I killed her.
It's a black actress. I know who exactly you're talking about.
I can't remember.
They have to crawl through.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Where they have to crawl out that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I killed her, and it was very interesting because on that particular scene, when I sliced her throat, you could actually, and there was mesh in, but it was the way the lighting was hit it. You could actually see my eyes very clearly on that scene.
Mm-hmm. We have to go back and watch that.
Yeah, I know, right? Like slow-mo.
There's a still of that, right? And it's me. And then there's a whole diatribe about people who are like, oh, no, you could tell that that's so-and-so or that's so-and-so. I'm like, guys, it's me. It's one of the actors. And it's not. The actors never got into wardrobe. I think there was one... Where was it? Was it 1 or 2 when I think Skeet had it on 1. So it was just the robe though.
Maybe.
I can't remember. Whoever had the robe on, but no, in 1 and 2, none of the actors actually got into full wardrobe and did Ghostface.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I would not want that. I would not want an actor to be able to have to do that because seeing out of that mask is a super challenge, right? And running around in that robe is just horrendous. And then to sit there and do physical acting on top of that, it's, you know, you got to be on your A game. It's not just, like I said, that opening sequence with Drew was so critical in that.
Yes.
I could be an actor all the way up to the time that I had to stab her, but the whole time I'm pursuing her in character, my brain is knowing that in about two steps, I hit my mark, I grab her, and then I got to stab her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it worked out. So I was so cognitive of watching, because those were back then, those were retractable knives. Right. And occasionally they wouldn't retract.
Wow.
And yeah, so that's scary stuff. So when I stabbed Drew, I was very cognitive and specific on where I hit her with that knife. And you could see it when you watch the film over and you would watch me pull my head down and really focus on where I'm stabbing her.
Mm-hmm.
And it was twofold. Once it was like, it wasn't even because I was intention of the character that I want to stab her. And it was very deliberate of where and how and what I did. And the upside of that is I could be very cognitive as the stuntman taking care of my actress of how, where, and what I did. So mm-hmm. it worked out really well. Mm-hmm. But when you look at it in replay, you'll see me drop my head and like look laser beam on where I'm stabbing her. It wasn't like mm-hmm. I was looking up at the moon just playing. Mm-hmm. Not a chance. There's no way. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew exactly where I wanted it. And it was very intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Which added to that character. When you look at it, it's like, oh no, that was personal. That was intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
All these things now I go back.
I know we have to go rewatch this now
just to see.
Yeah, so like when we get done with our awesome podcast here, you guys are like, okay, keep it up, right? And you're like, oh yeah, that's what he was talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Put the movie on.
Which one did you have more fun shooting, one or two?
I would say two.
Okay.
Because we were off obviously on the heels and success of one.
Right.
And then Tony had brought me in to do the car stuff, which is car stuff's always fun, right?
Yeah.
So car, you know, we're just always having a blast and they were crashing cars, man. You can't get better than that.
Mm-hmm. What a day of work.
Yeah. So that was the best.
So I know you go to a lot of cons. You keep bringing that up. How is it for you when you go to a con?
So cons are great, you know, and I had no intention of doing cons. I didn't even know what those things were. Until a couple of years ago when they kind mm-hmm. of, they came on the 25th anniversary of Scream 1, they kind of dug me out of the woodwork.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, Tony Sears was like, no, you got to come and check these things out. I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, and I went and did one with him and had such a great time just hanging out with him, you know, and then obviously the fans are just freaking awesome. It's all about the fans.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, if it wasn't as fun interacting with the fans as it is, I probably wouldn't do it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the fans. And
that
so
makes sense.
I love my fans. I love Scream fans. And you got to remember, I'm a horror fan myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really cool to go to these horror cons and hang out with horror fans and obviously Scream stuff and the Scream cast and all that. It's just lots and lots of fun.
Yeah.
And you know, you guys gone to the convention, right?
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
and what's so cool about horror and horror cons is that, you know, you have anime, you have voiceover, you have Comic-Con, you have all these different venues, right? But none of them are as cool as horror in the sense that, you know, you and me can get together and like, hey, let's mash up Jason, Freddy, and Scream, and what do we get? Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. So we get Ghostface in Freddy wardrobe with a machete.
That's true.
Whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And you could do that at a horror con, and people go, "That's cool."
Yeah,
right? Exactly.
You know, and anime is fun, and Comic Con is fun, but they don't mash up like that. They don't.
Right.
They stay in their lane. In fact, it's the other side of the coin. Is they're so, man, if your shoelaces are wrong, you know, they get you. And there's something to be said about that detail, the attention to that I really love about those anime and Comic Cons, because they get those, you know, a lot of them are handmade hours upon hours and thousands of dollars, and they get these perfect replicas.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Yeah, it's insane, yeah. Some of those cosplays.
Yeah, right? And mm-hmm. so I really dig that attention to detail and where they go with that. And they're cosplaying that character, but they don't take characters and mash them up like horror's
fans. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Horror fans are kind of weird, and I love them. Myself included, right?
Yeah, we're all about that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's so cool that when we're doing these cons, that, you know, these people are taking their hard-earned money and they're coming to these cons and they're standing in these ridiculous lines.
Oh, yeah.
That's always 99.99% of the time, it's just a love fest.
Yes.
Right? Everybody's in line, laughing and loving him. We all are in the same boat. I mean, even though I'm on the other side of the table, I see those lines out there. I'm like, I got to get to that last person 200 deep.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And there's real pressure that I put on myself to do that. And yet I want to make sure I give everybody a little bit of time because they're there for the energy exchange that between me and fans is really important from both mm-hmm. sides.
Yeah, mm-hmm,
for sure.
And I want to be able to sit down just like you and I are talking now. And maybe I can't give them 10, 20 minutes, but I could give them a quick three.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. All right, what's your best question? Or like, all right, scream 1 through 6. Give me your best or worst. What do you got? Right. Mm-hmm. And spend some quality time. It might be only 3 minutes, but it's quality 3 minutes. Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's really important to the fan. And it's super important to me. I don't want ever to have anybody walk away from the Lee Waddell experience being bummed mm-hmm. or disappointed or let down.
I love that. Yeah, that's great.
How many cons do you do a year?
So like my, I just got done. My dance card's pretty full. So I'm okay on March. I'm not doing much in March, but then starting in April, I'm doing a film, a quick little 4 or 5 days.
Oh, okay, great.
And then I go into FanX Calgary, Calgary Fan Fest, I think it was called. And then between that and the end of the year, let's call it November, I have 14 events.
Ooh. Wow.
Okay.
Wow. You're busy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kidding.
And people don't realize that, you know, and not all of those are Scream reunions. So like, I think we got four or six reunions, which are majors.
Right.
Right. And then, and then I have, I think the rest are just solos.
Gotcha.
I might be doing a couple, like this year is the first year I've ever done like a haunted attraction.
Wow. Okay.
Right. Which sounds mm-hmm. super fun. Like, I'm kind of excited about it because I've mm-hmm. never done one.
Where's this at?
What's that? I can't remember the name of it right off the top, but it's up in, south side of Detroit.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And, what's it called? Haunted attraction, maybe.
Okay. That would be better.
I'll update, mm-hmm. you know, I'm being really lazy right now. I haven't like updated my link tree or my website. Mm-hmm. So I've never done a haunted attraction. I've never done a haunted house. So how cool is that going to be?
That's going to be awesome. Amazing.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, that's very much so.
I'm really excited about doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that'll be super fun. Never done it before. Looking forward to it. And that'll be a whole different experience than like a convention.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so I don't really know what to expect. I just know I want to go have fun.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
for sure. Yeah.
And hang out with cool haunted house people.
Yeah, haunted house people. Did they reach out to you for that or?
Yeah, absolutely. They mm-hmm. did. And, you know, and the thing is like, I got the best agent in the world. His name's Sean Clark and he runs, you know, he has the lion's share and everybody knows Sean Clark and he crushes it.
Okay.
He goes and, super horror fan, super collector. He has a podcast.
Does he have black hair?
Yeah, Malfunction is what he's on.
Exactly.
And he has Convention All Stars as his agency.
Yep. Right? I know exactly who you're talking about.
Okay.
He is a super fan, super collector, super agent. Love him. And he just spoils me rotten. Right?
That's great. Him, but,
you know, but the thing is like, he's so busy working an 80-hour week and a 72-hour weekend, you know, so if somebody reaches out to him and, you know, he can't get back to him, that's nothing personal. And if they reach out to me and, you know, I talk to him often and he gives me my dance card and if someone can't get a hold of me through him, they'll reach out directly through like Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Like you guys did, right?
Yeah,
I think we know that.
I'm so glad you check your messages.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, that's just it. That's, and you know, Instagram's my main deal, and it's, you know, I don't know how many followers I have on there now, but it's always me. And I don't ever want to be one of those people, you know, I hope I get so big that it's a burden, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But mm-hmm. I don't want to be that guy that has 100,000 people that doesn't answer his mail.
Correct.
Yeah.
I want to be the dude that's like, nope, if you're talking to me on Instagram, you're talking to me. And that's how I run that business.
That's great.
I love that too.
So I always want to stay in contact with people like you and fan base and all that. So, mm-hmm. I don't want to ever lose that connection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's gotcha. Important.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to do any cons in Florida this year?
I don't think so. I know Spookala, we went down there last season and did mm-hmm. it. They're kind of having a pseudo reunion this year, but not everybody's rolling in. I think Matt's down there. I think David's coming back in there for a day.
Mm-hmm.
Spookala, Florida was a great show, man. I love that show.
We do so too.
If they called, I would absolutely be there in a second.
Mm-hmm.
We actually were there at Spookala last year. We had a booth there. Mm-hmm. We were promoting that work.
Yeah, we popped over because we vend and we popped over the celebrity area. And yeah, what you're talking about, like you definitely had a long line because you were on our list to go say hi. And then we were like, we got to get back to the booth. But it's just, I love seeing how many people come out just to see, you know, all of y'all because it's awesome.
And I appreciate that. And it's so neat to be a part of that whole fun circus great time. It's just, you know, super blessed to do it. And you know, but as you guys know, you know, you have a booth, right?
Yeah.
And you, that's your job, so to speak. You can't get out of that. It's not like you went vendor shop, right?
No, we wish, you know? But so yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't ever get time, maybe a few minutes in the morning before the doors open. Mm-hmm. I'll walk around and say hi to some vendors that I know or look around and do a little shopping, so to speak. Not vendor shopping, but like, mm-hmm. oh, hey, there's some shirts or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, getting out of the booth once the door opens, the only time I leave the booth is to go to photo ops.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
Otherwise, I have a line and those people are standing in that line and I want to get to every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want anybody to, you know, not get their time with me.
Yeah.
I really commend that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great.
I really like, these big long lines, I always wonder, you know, how you guys do it. And I commend that. My hat's off to you.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that. But you got, you know, and the thing about, and everybody on the Scream team, as I affectionately call them, right? Neb, Matt, Skeet, bro, it doesn't matter who you're talking to. They're all cut like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They all, I mean, you know, Matt, Neb, and Skeet, I mean, everybody has lines.
Right.
And, you know, I don't care what time it is, we're going to go until we don't have anybody left.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
And if that means they're going to kick us out, then I'm taking photos and we're having a tailgate party in the parking lot.
Mm-hmm. Come on. That's great. Right?
Mm-hmm. We'll just take it outside. So we just, and all of them, everybody cast wise on the Scream team, they're all cut like that. That's, you know, that's just worth that ethic. And that's how much they love and interact with that fan base.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cause time Sunday night hits, we don't have a voice. We're all tired and beat up.
Yeah.
And Monday's just a reset. I mean, we don't do anything because we leave it all on the field because of the interaction and the energy exchange that you have with, you know, by the time I'm done talking with 300-400 people at the end of the weekend, I'm spent.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't think about it. Like, oh, you're doing this BS. And I'm like, correct, I am, but there's still, because I go 110%. I don't ever sit down. I don't like slack up. And like, mm-hmm. these people are paying a lot of money to come and see me, and I don't care if it's 3 minutes or 30 minutes. They're going to get me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's great.
Yeah,
really.
So it's really important to you know, and that's what I bring to the game. It's really important to do that because the fans are just. And the same for you guys. If we collectively did not have fans, none mm-hmm. of this would happen.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so I guess speaking as a business model, the fan is our customer.
Yes.
We're in the customer service business.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So without those beautiful, crazy horror fans, and I'm one of them, you know, every mm-hmm. once in a while I'll go to a con like this and like geek out. Mm-hmm. And like, who did I see at a con not too long ago? Like, oh, Peter Criss original drummer from Kiss.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Right. Mm-hmm. Soundtrack of my youth.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I just pulled a big flex. I told my handler and everybody, I'm like, I got to meet this guy, make it mm-hmm. happen. Right. And so like right after photo ops, I just went in there and totally ambushed him. He's like, hey, Lee, come on in, man. It's so cool to meet you. And we just sat down and then it was really neat to have, you know, we didn't even talk about films and music or anything. We were like, so what do you do on your weekends? Like, yeah, I'm hanging out with grandkids. And we've talked to like life stuff.
Wow. Right.
Mm-hmm. Which was so refreshing. And I'm like, you know, such a delight to meet this guy, this icon of rock and roll. Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah.
And just to have like talk about everything but making movies or Ghostface or even Kiss.
Right.
And so it's just, and for that like 5 or 10 minutes, he and I had this beautiful exchange of energy and ideas mm-hmm. and fun, took a few pictures, and it was a great, you know, like I said, I fanboyed out. How cool right. is that?
That's you very know? Cool.
I love that story.
Mm-hmm. So when you're not yeah. performing, when you're not on set, what do you do for fun?
Yeah, since we're there.
No, so like, yeah, like right now I'm sitting at my house in Texas, you know, my studio, I got rid of my LA place or it's going out on the market. So my studio's torn down. I'll build one out here you know, later this year. And so, you know, I'm sitting upstairs in my game room, hanging out, talking with you guys,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to go out on the boat tomorrow, get some fishing in, probably go swim by the boat, go hang out with some friends at the boat store. I don't know, mm-hmm. you know. I'm playing a lot of pickleball and a lot of fishing. That's kind of my go-to right now.
Gotcha.
Sounds nice.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, you know.
So I got to ask, can you rank the Scream films?
Oh.
Where do you see each one? What the best to worst?
Oh, you mean like 1 through 6?
1 through 6. Like, what's your best one? Clearly, okay. You're probably going to go to number one, but.
Here we go. Here's the lightning round. You guys ready? Because as soon as I'm done, you're jumping in. You ready?
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So bestest ever to worstest ever, at least right mm-hmm. now, because we only have 6.
Right.
I'm going to go 1, 2, 6, 5, 3, 4, suck.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. You right. ready?
What, mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you got?
So I got 1.
Mm-hmm.
I got 2.
2.
4. I got 4.
Mm-hmm.
I got 6.
Mm-hmm.
5.
And then 3.
3.
We have the exact same list. We did this like last year and ended up on the same page.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. So you're gonna go 4 over 3.
Yes. And that,
okay. All mm-hmm. right.
I know. It's don't a bit get unusual, me wrong. You know.
Mm-hmm. I like Ray Donovan.
You. I'm judging you. That's okay.
I like
you. So, you hey, can do thanks that. For having that's me
on
fine.
The podcast. Got to go. See you later. Bye.
He's done with us now.
Don't get me wrong. I love Ray Donovan, the actor that plays Ray Donovan, and the actor that yep. plays Cotton Weary. Big yep. fan of his, but
yep.
we like 4 a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. I don't well, know what hey, it is. Emma Roberts. I mean, mm-hmm.
And I got a soft spot for Aiden. You know, she's a lot of fun. She's a cool chick. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I saw, in fact, there's another one's coming out and doing some cons now, right? So Hayden's getting out there a little
yeah.
bit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We and, tried to go to another con. It was Ohio Con. And it was Hayden Panettiere was there.
Mm-hmm.
Ed Herman, or the guy from Ghostbusters.
Oh.
Ernie Hudson was
Ernie
there.
Ernie Hudson, I was going to say, yeah.
Oh, me.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, how did the strike affect you at all in any way?
Not too much me personally. It was weird that, you know, and I'm not a fan, and I'm going out on the record right here. I'm not a fan of Screen Actors Guild. Right, even okay. though it's my governing guild, right? They haven't done me any favors in my career.
Okay.
And they overstepped their bounds, in my opinion, on saying what I could and could not promote at
yes.
a con. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people like got afraid of SAG. And said, oh, I can't promote that route and I can't talk about that. And a lot of people actually canceled going to convention, you know,
yeah,
yeah.
guest wise, or they would cancel the panel. Wham, wham, wham. And I'm like, they needed to stay there in their lane on that flex.
Yeah.
Because right? going to a con to have a panel and talk about it to horror fans about stuff in the past. And a big deal is like, hey, what are you working on? Well, I just finished this film and that's what I just finished. Okay. You're not necessarily promoting it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, whatever. And so I was just like, stay in your lane.
Yeah. Okay?
Mm-hmm. We ain't talking movies here in the sense that this isn't film. This is a con, live audience. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't a after job where it's taped and broadcast. These are a bunch of people that are working really hard to come and see some really cool people mm-hmm. and get some autographs and hear some stories. Yeah. And you people, you know, from the union side are telling them not to talk.
Correct.
Like, shut mm-hmm. the hell up. So I'm like, get out of here. You know, whatever. And so I was really not a fan of the union when they did that. Because they, in my opinion, they overstepped their bounds.
Are you afraid of AI coming?
No. No, because AI, as good as it is, it's just like CG right now. You could take, and CG is great, mm-hmm. but the audience is so educated now.
Yes.
That they know what CG is.
Yes.
I don't care how good the CG is, you can tell.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? And so AI is going to come along, and AI is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Right? But part of the whole union negotiation between producers and Screen Actors Guild was the AI portion, right? Because once you're scanned and they capture you, they will be able to make full-on movies without
Right.
And eventually it'll go there.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Because now you don't have to pay residuals and usage fees and all that other stuff. And, you know, I think it won't happen overnight, but it'll be a slow methodology behind it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and some of the neat things about it, maybe neat, I don't know yet, will be where they could take an actor or an actress that have passed away before
and
bring. And there's enough, you know, you take an A-list actor, wouldn't it be kind of cool to go see, like, you know, like a John Wayne again?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's only a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
And they could almost do it now. I mean, they did it with, what's his name died from Fast and Furious, right?
They Paul Walker.
Yeah, Paul Walker.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Paul Walker, right? So they already did it in there, but not at the level that AI is going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be, there might be some novelty on seeing some of those actors come around again.
Yeah.
I think that might be pretty interesting. AI is here to stay.
Yeah.
Genie's out of the bottle, good, bad, or indifferent. It's mm-hmm. on. So hang on for the ride.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Sure? Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because, like, the more that stuff comes to play, the more I get disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I find myself leaving my phone more often now.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are pushing me for TikTok and Facebook and all this stuff. I'm like, Instagram's enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Realistically. Mm-hmm.
That's a full-time job right there.
Mm-hmm.
Dealing it with is, Instagram. You know, and it's so crazy, even on my small scale, that I already have staff helping me with that.
That's great.
I got people on the payroll every month that I pay to make that happen.
That's great.
It is, but at the same time, it's kind of like, holy crap, this thing's already out of control, right?
Yeah.
I'm a guy, you know, I'm an actor, stunt guy, and that's great, but now I'm having staff to help run my social media.
Yeah.
And prior to coming back in and doing Ghostface conventions and horror and acting again, you know, I was happily retired. I didn't have any social media. I'd gotten rid of it all.
Wow.
You know, I'm like, okay, I'll do Instagram. And that's I'm good with that. And now we'd be like, you need to do Facebook. I'm like, I don't want to do that. But the only thing with Facebook, and I'm not banging it, it's just like I can link it to my Instagram, so everything that goes on IG will automatically dump on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nice thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's some really cool Facebook groups about Ghostface and Scream and some of the other horror and some of the other films, right, that I'll have access to if I go over and do Facebook.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So let me ask you, outside of doing cons, do you get recognized a lot on the street?
No.
No?
And so far, so good.
Gotcha.
Right. I'll go to like this cult Classic I did last weekend. I went down there just to hang out with Tony and Alan Robinson, good friends of mine, right? We all came, you know, Alan, I got Alan in the business and, you know, he crushed it. And we both are indebted to Tony. And I'm like, hey, you guys are going to be there. So I jump in the truck and I just run on down there and just knocking around for on a quick Friday night. And I got recognized. Yeah, it was great to hang out with the guys and have some dinner and, you know, just chill out. But, you know, I went by to the con and, yeah, I got recognized immediately. Well, I'm sure. You know, they're like, hey, are you signing? I'm like, no.
Nope.
No, I'm just here.
I'm just upset. I'm here being a fan, hanging out with the guys. And and what was cool about that, it was like, okay, well, you're going to be at Texas Frightmare in May. I'm like, yeah, I'll be there.
Wasn't Leonora and Nancy Ritter there?
Yeah, yes, they were.
Okay. Do you talk to them still?
Well, I wasn't there when they filmed. They filmed that right on the heels of when I killed Henry Winkler, right? So, we finished up that scene, finished up with Wes being the janitor dressed as Freddy.
Yeah.
Right.
And then they went straight into the bathroom scene with Leonora and Nancy.
Thank you for bringing up the kill with Henry Winkler. I almost forgot about that. How was shooting that?
So, out of my 30 plus years as a stuntman, that is the only time I fanboyed out.
Yeah.
Sure.
Absolutely geeked it on Henry Winkler. But Henry's such a pro and such a gracious guy. And I mean, I owned it. I go to kill Henry Winkler and it's Henry Winkler. It's the Fonz. It's the guy. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am supposed to kill him. And Henry's not a big guy. And I didn't want to get real physical with him. It's like Drew. I didn't really, even though I controlled Drew when we fell down, all that stuff, you know, Henry was a little bit of a different setup. It was face to face and really aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, Henry, man, I owned it. And he's laughing. And he goes, and so we did a take and the energy wasn't there. And he goes, man, you got to bring the energy up. I'm like, Henry, I'm sorry, man, but you're Henry Winkler. And then, so here's how cool he is. Right. So he sees that I'm struggling with the energy because because I was geeking out, that was Henry. And he immediately goes back into Henry character and he starts screwing with me. He just starts poking me in the shoulder and he's like, getting in my head. And I see where he goes, so I switch back into Ghostface character. Mm-hmm. And now he's screwing with Ghostface. Embry's screwing with Ghostface, right? Immediately shifts the energy. And so by the time we get in this next take, I'm righteously pissed at him.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And here we go. Action. And man, I freaking drilled him. Mm-hmm. I didn't hurt him. I kept it within the stunt envelope, so to speak. But the energy, the intention behind me stabbing him multiple times was there. And of course it was a great scene at that point.
Yeah.
But he was such a pro and he was so gracious to give me that, to get me to snap out of it and get into character with him and give me that little nonchalant acting little nugget that stayed with me for the rest of my career.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
That is actually probably my most memorable scene. So they're like, well, what was more memorable? I'm like, the scene with Henry Winkler is more memorable and more precious to me, not because I didn't have a great time crashing cars and having fun with Drew, because Henry was such a pro and he gave me a piece of information that stayed with me the rest of my career. So the impact he had on me was, decades.
And that emotional connection you had with each other.
Yeah. So it was really cool. I want to track him down because I have my original 96 poster.
Okay.
And I need to have him sign it and revisit that scene and let him know how important that scene was to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
That's an awesome story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is really cool. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that.
And he's such a cool dude, man. He's so humble and so fun and he's so appreciative of where he's at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even at that time, right? Because now he comes off he was the biggest thing for 12 years on TV.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
12 seasons of Happy Days, number one show.
Mm-hmm.
Wraps that up. Then he's going to make the jump into film, which is a hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's making that transition. He's coming into the film, and he's just He's so appreciative and so humble, and he just loves where he's at with life.
Yeah. So,
top shelf guy, man. Top shelf.
Very much so.
Yeah.
We got to meet them at MegaCon. We got a picture with them, at the whole cast, but it was really quick.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It was so fun just being around all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So one of these days I'll cross his path and get to reiterate that story with him again. Mm-hmm. And he'll remember it. I'm pretty sure he'll remember. Probably because like Lee was such a geek. I'm like, yes, I was. So.
That's great. That is great.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but it's really cool to cross paths like that. Like me and Roger, we hadn't seen each other since day one, scene one of shooting. And we're going to be doing some cons together this year.
Oh. Right?
So he's always a pleasure to be around. Such a pleasant human being.
Very cool. And,
how was it working with him? I know he's on set doing the voice, and he's off set.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's like under a piece of cardboard outside getting rained on.
Oh, my gosh.
And so we never really crossed paths when we were filming. I mean, I kind of know who he was, and he was like, I'm like, who's the guy with a piece of cardboard? But, you know, it wasn't like we were hanging out having craft service together or anything like that. We were all working, and he was sequestered because he wanted to keep, you know, Wes didn't want Drew to have any tie-in on the voice. In fact, nobody saw him a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that was one of those elements that, you know, because if you know Roger and you see Roger, he's 180 off of Ghostface. He's this sweet, lovable insurance salesman of a guy, right? And then he comes up with that Ghostface voice, and it's just like, it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And so you put him behind... You put him behind the character with that wardrobe, and it gets sinister. It's scary.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever watch the MTV version of Scream?
Oh, the TV show?
The TV show.
I think I watched one episode and put it to bed after that.
The first season was not great because of the mask. I know when you go to a con, people still rock that mask. But when they actually had the licensing rights to switch to the iconic mask, then it started getting better.
Yeah, but by then it was, what, three seasons in?
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was the second season they started on. First season they had the white mask, and then the second season they switched over to the iconic mask.
The series never went anywhere with me. I watched one episode, and then I'm like, eh, this sucks.
Yeah. So,
that's what I did, too. I didn't give it a fair shot.
As a matter of fact, And I guess it has its own place, but then, like, how many Stab movies are there? Seven? Six? Something like that? There's a bunch of them.
Yes.
Right? Six?
Yeah, there's six.
Yeah, and so, like, I seen one, all right? And it just, and not because I have anything against Stab, it's just, it's not in my wheelhouse, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
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 And, yeah, but the Stab movies were released in the genre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know when I designed a Stab shirt. I know at the cons it sells out.
People love gangbusters. That stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, so let me ask you something. Speaking of selling t-shirts, what do you think about, and I'm finally at the point, I think, where the brand's big enough to support it, selling I Killed Drew t-shirts again.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, people would eat that up.
I would buy that. You let me know and I'll be your first customer.
You've already got, guaranteed sale.
So, I mean, when I first started getting in the game, I made that t-shirt up and it was a great driver and a lot of people loved it. And I think it's big enough now and established enough now where I might do a run of them and I'll probably just sell them on the website. I don't want to, I'd sell them at the cons, but you know, now I'm lugging around boxes of shirts.
Yes.
I'm already lugging boxes of stuff and, you know, checking bags. I really don't need to add to that.
That's fair.
Well, let me ask you a question. The pictures that you guys sign at the cons, does the con provide that or do you have to bring that yourself?
Those are, a little bit of both, really. Mainly I bring my own stuff, right?
Okay.
Or it's provided, you know, whatever. But then there's sometimes the cons have their own posters. Like Spookala had their great poster back from last year. Signed a bunch of those. Signed a bunch for the guys, some promoters, and all that stuff. So sometimes the con gives you stuff, right? In that sense, they'll provide stuff. But 99% of the time, you're bringing your own inventory.
Yep. Okay. So when you do a con, they reach out to you and say, "Hey, we'll cover X, Y, Z to get you here." Is that pretty much how it goes?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they reach out to Sean, my agent, and then they negotiate, you know, airfares and guarantees and per diems and hotels and blah, blah, blah. You know, that's all.
Right.
And that's status quo, right? That's, there's nothing new under the sun being invented
right
there. Yeah. So they fly up, and the cons are great. You know, you know, they fly in, they pick you up, they drop you off, you know. A lot of times they take you to dinner, and it's really nice interact. You know, and so my job, and I mean, you guys follow me, so I promote heavy.
Yes.
I'm a heavy promoter, right? Mm. So like with the Calgary con coming up in late April, starting this month, I'll fire up that machine and you'll just see me run it into the ground. We're like, would you get done with it already? Right. You know, that's how much hell, that's how much promo I like to do.
Yeah.
Because my job, if I'm blessed enough where a promoter wants me to come in and help them out on a show in a sense, right? Notice how I said that. My job is to get people through that door.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I want to get them through that door to get to my booth and the rest of the Scream Team's booth.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so my job is to promote that. And I want those people to come and see me and everybody else and the vendors and have a great weekend.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I probably promote heavier than anybody else in this business. The only person that promotes heavier than me on that level, I'm not talking about the promoters, is Webb Scraven, Bill Perry. Right. And Webb's is Wes's, he was Wes's web designer, great actor, good stunt man, published a few books. So, I mean, he's off doing cons on his own account. He's the only guy that runs a heavier promotional program than I do.
Oh.
So the Friday night when you get into a con, you sign everything. What is a typical night for you? Do you go back to your room and just crash, or you're like?
Yeah, usually. I mean, you know, Friday nights are usually a lighter night, right? A Friday right. con night's right, what, 7 to 9, 5 to 9, something like that.
Not too bad, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and I'm a big believer of, I come in on Thursdays if I can. Because if you're going to fly in on Friday, uncanceled flight away from not making Friday. I don't like doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So the majority of us come in on Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah.
We slide into our Friday day, and then we'll head over. Let's see if our con starts at 5. I head over at 4, get the layout of the con, so I know where the green room's at. I know where my entrances and entrances are. Where's the bathroom? Where's photo ops? Where's panels? I get all that advance work done ahead of time.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most guys don't do that. And then get something to eat. And then let's say we started at 5 o'clock. I show up around... If I want to hit some vendors, I show up at 4:30, talk to the vendors. Otherwise, I get there before, let's call it 4:45, show times at 5, boom, open the doors, let's get to business.
Yep.
And then grind it until the last person's gone, whatever the time that is. I don't care if it's 8:59 or 9:59, doesn't matter to me.
Okay.
And then by then, you know, you're already 100, 200 people deep. I want to go back, take a shower, and go to bed.
Yeah, yeah, right? Absolutely. Yes.
And I usually don't eat because I don't like eating late. I don't do that.
Yeah.
And then started on Saturdays and Sundays. And then depending on location and where it's, I'll try to get out Sunday night so I can sleep in my own bed.
Right.
Otherwise I'll travel Monday.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
And so, but we don't go out, but it's not like this big old freaking party. You know,
right.
Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we might go out as a team on Saturday night, maybe.
Mm-hmm. If it's anything like us, you're tired. You're after a long day at the con, you don't want to go out and party. You want to go home and go to sleep, and you have to do it all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you got to, you know, and like I said, it's that energy exchange. So you got to pace yourself for those 3 days.
Yes.
And you're doing photo ops and you're doing panels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and it's nonstop. I don't do lunch breaks or any of that stuff.
Wow. Okay.
I might take 10 minutes to go out behind the screen and destroy a coffee and some protein bars.
Yeah.
Okay.
But my handler, who's delightful, Helena, she's a top shelf girl. She does a lot of merchandise for a lot of big bands, and she comes into play with me. Why? I think because she feels sorry for me. But you know, so she's my main handler and does a great job. And she's always on me about, you know, she keeps my schedule, makes sure that I get fed and watered. You know, mm-hmm. she really takes great care of me. And she's super important to the team and the process. Mm. And so it's good to have someone like her reminding me, because she knows that I put my head down. And like we started our conversation, you got to work.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. You got to hustle. And mm-hmm. that's how I am on those cons. I put my head down. I just go until there's nobody left.
Mm-hmm.
So she's really good at regulating me and making sure I, you know, at least drink water.
Yeah, stay high. That's good.
That's good. Yeah, yeah. Kind of important. Mm-hmm.
It is, because otherwise I just get in the zone. I start BSing and having fun with the fans and just going full throttle. Next thing I know, I haven't been drinking all day long, and I'm like, hey, you know,
not no wonder why I'm hitting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm hitting the wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Do you have any advice for people that want to get into your profession? And if so, what would that be?
Well, anymore, it goes back to the same thing, you know, I've talked about several times through the great little pod, is just like, if you're going to jump in and you're like, oh, I want to be a stuntman, you better live it and breathe it, and nothing else in your life matters. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you cannot, you know, you can't half-ass it. It's just mm-hmm. like, you know, you can't even do that with that. You can't do that with it. You know, I don't care if you're slinging coffee, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, if you're going to do something half-assed, that's the result you're going to get.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. and it's one thing to be working a part-time job, or, you know, if you're the actor and you're like, hey, I want to be an actor, and here's my daytime job waiting tables, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You still got to pay the rent. So those tips got to be important. So you better wait those tables.
And, yeah.
And, mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, if you're going to go in the stunt business, you better be able to live it, breathe it 24/7. Nothing mm-hmm. else is going to matter.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to support that habit. And on top of that, you better have some physical agility behind you. You better have martial arts, gymnastics, true. Both,
mm-hmm.
track, field. You have to be an athlete in some capacity.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, and because sometimes you can handle the physical part of being a good stuntman, but if you can't handle rejection, or if you can't sit there and grind it day in and day out and just keep like, I hadn't worked in 2 months. Holy crap. You know,
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind of stuff. Then don't get in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you were going crazy during COVID.
Well, I had retired by then. I mean, my last film was 2015. Right?
Okay.
So by the time COVID gets around, mm-hmm. you know, I'm fat anyway. So I'm just hanging out, you know,
mm-hmm.
The great thing about COVID is I brought the whole family back here to Texas, and they just camped out here.
That's okay. Good.
That's nice.
Yeah, because Texas and Florida, we didn't really shut down.
Right.
You know?
Not really. No.
No, we didn't. Nah.
That's true.
You know, so we mm-hmm. they spent the better part of the year sitting on the boat, hanging out, having a good time.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, that's the way to go through it. Yeah.
I love the fact that they were here safe. So I really, you mm-hmm. know, that was really cool to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so COVID didn't have that big of an impact on me personally. Mm-hmm. Outside of everybody knew somebody that died from COVID, which was right. terrible.
Terrible, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and so that, you know, that part sucked. And, but, you know, being in Texas, I could move around. I could go to the store. I mean, it didn't have this huge, huge impact on me personally in the outside right. of the office. You know, but some of those other places in the world, in the United States, are locked down. Man, those right. people, those poor people. Talking mm-hmm. about being like rats in the cage. Oof, mm-hmm. they were shut down.
Yeah,
yeah.
Not easy. Not easy.
Mm-hmm.
Not easy.
I gotta ask. You have an online store. What's on your online store? Where can people find your stuff? I mean,
you can go to originalghostface.com, which is my website, mm-hmm. and you're right. The only thing I'm selling right now on there is like a signed mask.
Okay.
And I was doing photos, but photos were just, I would go through so much inventory. And a lot of times I ended up stealing the photos that were supposed to be for my, you know, not for people, but for like for the website. They'd be on the road with me because I go through so much stock.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so like I'm doing signed masks right now. And then I think I'll probably push out some t-shirts
Will you do personal signatures?
What's that?
Will you do a personal signature if, like, we ordered something? You could be like, "To Limitless Broadcasting, Stay Spooky," or something like that.
Yeah, and I don't get too crazy on that. Otherwise, I'm writing novels. But right. I know you guys, right? Yeah, this. Well, you know, when you and I have time to chat offline, I'll send you out something. That's easy peasy.
Okay.
Yeah, so like if I sign a mask, it's like you could sit there and I'll put like, "What's your favorite scary movie?" And then right. I sign it. Because otherwise people are like, "Oh, say to Jessica, blah, 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 blah." Like, you know, it's a mask. You know, you can only write so much.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, that's so I'll personalize it to some degree, but I got to put some kind of parameters on it.
Otherwise, for sure. Mm-hmm. I gotcha. Okay. So my last question to you is, what's your favorite scary movie?
Because we ask everybody.
Well, there's two ways to answer that. There's obviously Scream 1, right? Mm-hmm. Which was great being a part of that and being part of the franchise, and two. But then when I look back and like, what's my favorite, you know, I grew up on Universal Horror. So like my all time Universal Horror favorite is like Creature of the Black Lagoon.
Ew, okay.
I like it. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I really liked that monster and that movie. So it's a really fond memories because my dad, I remember being with my dad watching that, like, you know, maybe 5 years old or whatever I was. And we'd be watching black and white horror.
Oh, that's awesome. So that was
my, right. So. I really like that. So obviously my soft spot is for Scream and the franchise. And then let me ask you this. What is the one character, before I run out of battery, because we've had a great podcast. I really enjoyed our time together. What is the one character? What's the one monster or horror character that really screwed with you guys that you don't like?
Ooh, what's her name from The Ring? I saw that when I was like 14 in the theater.
Yeah,
she freaked me the hell out. Yeah. And I stopped watching horror movies for like 10 years. Because as a teen, it just like that's freaked me out. Yeah.
I think mine was Saw.
Right.
Okay. I didn't really like that. I thought it was more gore porn than anything than horror. And I'm not into that. Like, what is Art the Clown?
Yeah. Yeah,
The Terrifier. We're gonna do it on the podcast, but I'm not into that. All that,
it's a little much for us.
Yeah, you know what? My first vivid movie of characters that I really did not like, even to this day, I don't like it, is those damn flying monkeys.
Okay, that's a good one. From The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah,
because as a kid, you're watching Wizard of Oz.
Yeah,
and things are going along quite well, and then all they got these little heinous flying monkey things.
Horrific. Yes.
I hated the flying monkeys. They still screw with me. I won't watch the flying monkeys.
Yeah, I don't like those either.
Can you do one more thing for us?
Yeah.
Can you do a drop for us? Can you say your name and then you're listening to You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast?
Yeah. All right, we'll do the outro on that. Ready?
Okay.
Hey, I'm Lee Waddell, the original Ghostface, and you're listening to You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Peace.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. Please go follow him. Hopefully you liked the episode because it was phenomenal.
A blast.
Yeah, we had such a great time. And thanks for reaching out on Instagram. You can find me at The Lee Waddell. There's a hard one to remember. And I'm so pleased you guys reached out. We got a chance to do this and bring us together and talk cool stuff. So
absolutely.
Then, hopefully we'll see each other at a convention.
Yes. Absolutely. If you ever make it to Florida again, hit us up. Chances are we'll be there.
Good chance, yeah. So probably.
Yeah, I'll be down. I'm pretty sure I'll be in Florida next year.
Okay.
All right. Awesome.
All right.
All right, guys.
Thank you so much. You have a good night.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Too. Bye.
You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast is produced and hosted by Robbie and Sammy Brooksby as part of the Limitless Broadcasting Podcast Network. Post-production and intro by Sammy Brooksby. Follow the show on Instagram at BoogeymanPod. You can also follow the Limitless Broadcasting Company at Limitless Broadcasting and your horror hosts at Robert1950 Studios and at The Samalam. We also have a TikTok at 1950 Studios. Email your creepy comments and spooky suggestions to us at boogeymanpod@gmail.com. Don't forget, everyone is entitled to one good scare. Have a horrific week.